Hello and welcome to the Whiteboard Rugby podcast. But today I am joined not by Sam Roberts, who is off sunning himself in Spain, but by the placement, and let's say slightly better the placement, Charlie Beckett, who is also a podcast host. He has been a player right the way around the world for the last 10 or so years. Charlie, we're going to talk about that in a different episode. But and he's currently at Liverpool Lightning as their forwards coach. Charlie, thank you very much for stepping into the void.
Hi, Sam. Thank you very much for having me. I think it's unfair to other Sam to say that I'm a better replacement. He is very, very good at this. But unfortunately, what I can't bring to this podcast is any more hair than it normally has, because anyone knows me knows I also have none. So it's just another handsome bald man on the podcast. That's how we go around here.
It is. And to be fair, I don't think... it's not a deliberate choice we've made, but it feels like we've pigeonholed ourselves now, and we can't get out of this. Just a succession of bald men on this podcast. So whoever's coming up next, you know, maybe start shaving now, and you'll have a better chance.
Yeah, you've got a lot of the boys at Gloucester. They had their milk challenge this week, I saw. So there's some potential co-hosts there before that hair starts growing back.
Oh, perfect! I'll get Sam to get on that. I know he's got some contacts down there. We'll get them now before it all comes back.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Charlie, we've got some big conversation topics today. We're actually recording on the morning of potentially some Louis Rees-Zammit news over in the NFL. We're going to talk about what that news is, and also what the future might hold for him, and whether it's a good thing for rugby, what's going on over there in the NFL. And then we're also going to talk on the Championship, something that we're both fond of, and you've spent a long time playing it. I've spent a while watching it as well, so we'll talk a little bit about that. But let's start with Rees-Zammit. So for those who are perhaps unfamiliar, because the NFL's contract and signing structure is quite different to what we see in rugby, but Rees-Zammit went over and he spent the off-season with the Kansas City Chiefs, who are Super Bowl champions, possibly more familiar to people as being the home of Travis Kelce, who is Mr. Taylor Swift. And so big location there, a lot of eyes on Rees-Zammit. Now, he had two options to stay with the Kansas City Chiefs. So he could have joined the active roster, which is the 53 best players who were over there. Or he could have joined the practice squad, which are 17 players who won't get into games unless there's injuries and will need to be kind of promoted to the active roster. But as it looks like at the moment, he didn't achieve either. So he's an international project player, essentially. So theoretically, there was a spare spot for him, but that was already filled by a Nigerian offensive tackle who looks like he will be staying around. So that meant that Rees-Zammit would have had to fill one of the other 16 spots, but they also were quite highly coveted. And so it's, you know, looks like the Chiefs haven't used one of those on Rees-Zammit. I'm just going to pause there, Charlie. I know you're an NFL fan as well. Is there anything there that I've missed out? Is that a broadly accurate description of what's going on?
That is a far better description than I could have ever given it, Sam. I think the thing you hit, which is really important in this, is Zam's incredibly unfortunate because that IPP slot is an extra slot that the sides can use. So the fact that the Chiefs are already using that IPP slot, it made it so much tougher for him straight away. So while landing at the Chiefs is a dream sort of move, it's like landing at, if you're talking about football over him, a Manchester City, they're the best team. It's like landing at Northampton Saints this season, but historically a Saracens. Like they are the top team. While that was awesome for him that way, it's obviously tougher to get into that squad because it's a better squad, and then you double down that on that with the IPP slot also being taken, and it was an incredibly tough mountain to climb for him to make even the practice squad, let alone the active roster over here at the Chiefs. But I think you've seen on social media a lot of people saying, oh well, that's it, he's failed. It's far from that. Like, if someone doesn't make, again, Manchester City, Saracens, Northampton, you don't go, oh, they failed. There are a lot of teams who they still might go and play for. And I think that's what we're about to see with Zam, which I think we're about to get into, is there's already rumours circling of where he might land. I don't think this is the end of his NFL dream at all.
Yeah, because the rumours that are emerging this morning are that he will go to the Jacksonville Jaguars, who have a big UK connection because they play two of their games every season in Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, and their owner is also Tottenham's owner. So there's a big UK connection there. There was rumours that he would go there anyway, I think, before they signed for the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, what's unclear at the moment, and again, this is into the weeds of NFL contracts, is that he could be released by the Kansas City Chiefs. Then, if no one else signs him, have the option to put them on their practice squad, or have the option to say, actually, no, we're kind of done with you. You're a free agent. You can sign anywhere else. If Jacksonville have claimed him off this waiver system, then they have to put him on their active roster. So he has to be potentially in there to play the games during the season. If Kansas don't want to bring him back, he's a free agent, and so he could be put onto the practice squad of Jacksonville. So I guess all this means is that his NFL career and dream there is potentially carrying on. Now, obviously, we're not an NFL podcast, although I think both of us kind of look fondly over that general direction. But do you think this is a good thing for rugby? Do you think it's raised a profile in the US, and do you think it's raised it in a positive way?
It's a really interesting question, mate, because is one of our best players, one of the biggest stars in our game, leaving our game a good thing? The answer is no. There's no way you can wrap that up as being a good thing, unfortunately. Is there anything rugby could have done to stop or compete? I honestly don't think so. Like, there are a lot of issues in rugby at the moment. Like, I've spoken about it on the Championship Club podcast. I've spoken about my social media. I think there are well documented by much more informed people than me as well of the problems we have in rugby. Even if rugby union in this country was its absolute best, if the NFL came calling for Lurie Sammet, there is nothing we could have done to compete because we just don't have the financial side of things. We do not have the fan base. We will never have the fan base that NFL has because we just don't have the number of people that there are in America. And also, the NFL is kind of a closed shop. If you want to watch top-tier American football, you watch the NFL. If you want to watch top-tier rugby union, even in Great Britain, there's two leagues. Even in the UK, yeah, there's the URC and the Premiership. Before you even get to France or to Super Rugby, so we could never have competed. So it you can't wrap it up as a good thing in that way. There's no spin you can give that. But I don't think it's a huge indictment on rugby that we couldn't keep him, because, like I said, I don't think we ever could have. You then kind of look at does it raise the profile of rugby in America? I think it does. I think you see Travis and Jason Kelce talking about it on the New Heights podcast, which is one of the biggest sports podcasts in the world. You see the hype that was around Zam going. You see the interest, people saying he's a rugby player. And the conversation starts coming. It's always been mumbling under the surface, isn't it, of the transferable skills from rugby to NFL, those sort of things. Now we're seeing a few more players, both from rugby league and union, make that move across. The interest in rugby can only start to peak, I think, in America because that, and it is great time with the fact that the MLR is going from strength to strength in America. That league is getting stronger and stronger, and you're seeing a lot more experienced players and coaches heading over there now. I think they are next year, I believe, launching and hoping it works, their first professional women's league over there, yeah, which will be absolutely brilliant. You see that off the back of the success of the women's sevens, getting their bronze medal, and the extra investment in them in America is brilliant, because one thing Americans love is Olympic medals. So you start getting some Olympic success, they get a smell of it, they want more. So I do think we're at a point in America where rugby could really have a bit of an explosion in popularity because of a number of factors, and definitely having a high profile rugby star like Lurie Sammet, who's reached the absolute top of the game here, he's a British and Irish Lion, go over to the NFL. While not the best thing for our sport over here, because we've lost one of our best players, I do think that's going to have maybe a few American heads turning, going, oh, what's this rugby about? And maybe pique interest a little bit more.
It's an interesting one, because I agree. I think that it has the potential to be really
significant because it just opens the door to what there'll be. Is there's also loads of clips that you saw when he was first signed of what he was doing in rugby, and that is something that isn't always going to come across in the US, and that the average American fan isn't going to be seeing that many clips of rugby. And so I think that makes a big difference. I guess to put a different slant on it and be keen to hear your thoughts on this, the challenge or the potential downside might be that people go, he is rugby's best talent, and yeah, we can debate whether that's how true that is, but he's certainly probably one of the best five wingers that rugby has. And he's going over there and he can't make an NFL squad. And you're absolutely right. Obviously, he's trying to make the Man City squad, essentially. But do you think there's going to be any downside to that of US fans saying, I imagine, think that the NFL is the best kind of professional sporting league in the world. But this is kind of more fuel to the fire that the NFL is more physical, more tactical, more skillful than perhaps the Bears.
Yeah, there definitely will be people making that argument, and unfortunately you can't stop them. It's also an argument that I don't think we'll ever, ever, ever know the answer to, because how can you compare? Like, how can you? Unless you have someone who has like a 10-year career in both and reached the top of the game in both, how can you compare? No one's going to do that, because the issue is that Zam, let's use Zam as an example, is going over, he's reached the absolute peak of rugby. He's played rugby, let's say, since he was 7 years old. He's going over and competing now, 15 years later, with athletes who have been playing American football since they were 3 or 4 or 5. Like, you, unless you have been over and seen it, or you listen to the podcast, or watch the behind-the-scenes clips, or those sorts of things, you cannot fathom the way some of these talents, when they are young, are essentially groomed, not in a weird way, in a sporting way, to go and be NFL stars, to go to college, especially with... That's the big thing, is going to college. For a lot of these athletes who are from less privileged backgrounds, the only way they get a college education is on a full scholarship going, and the only way they do that is through sport, and the highest number of sporting scholarships at universities in America is football, because they're the biggest programs numbers-wise. So for a lot of these young men, the only way to get out of a life they don't want to have anymore is to get an education. The only way to do that is to play football. So it's beyond a hobby. It's their absolute life. And when you come to it 15 years later, it doesn't matter how physically gifted you are. And Zam, I've seen it up close and personally. He's one of the most physically gifted men I've ever seen, and one of the hardest working. You can't really catch up on 15 years. That is, unless you have a time machine, you can't do that. So it will add fuel to the fire of rugby's inferior to NFL, to football, because their best can't even make our practice squad. That is a rather dim argument, in my opinion, that will be being had by people for a long, long time. Obviously I'm biased to rugby. Obviously I don't think any of these guys could survive in the front five, but I don't think half the people outside the front five could survive in the front five in rugby. I just think we kind of have to stop arguing, comparing, and just enjoy both sports what they are. And the fact that there is transferable skills is exciting, and the fact that maybe there are athletes who could do both. But it doesn't mean that either sport is inferior or superior to the other.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's one of those arguments that's had by people who've already decided which side of the fence they sit on.
Yeah.
And I think that you end up in this situation of, I'm a massive fan of the NFL, have been since a kid, obviously a massive fan of rugby as well. I see them as, they're similar sports in, you tackle, you carry, you pass in some ways, but they're obviously vastly different. And to compare the two, you can only really compare something like, a 40-meter time or a 40-yard time or a top speed or whatever it might be. But even that is misleading, because in a game, obviously, you've got the pads and stuff. So even those kind of things are not very comparable.
And I think what the NFL, American football, is incredible at is, because they have such big rosters, their athletes are, in my opinion, the most incredibly and impressively specialized athletes of what they do in any sport in the world, because they are so specialized. So the offensive linemen, they are enormous men who are incredibly strong, and you cannot even fathom how powerful they are for 6 to 10 seconds. But that's it, because that's their workload. The wide receivers are unfathomably fast at sprinting, But again, in shorter bursts, you ask any of these guys to do 80 minutes, they can't because they're not trained to it. You ask any of us, I say us, the players, I'm not a player anymore. I've got to stop saying us. You ask any rugby player to go and... So the big one is like everyone talks about props and linemen. You ask any prop to go and try and compete in the line with any of the American football linemen, they'll get absolutely minced. But you ask any of those linemen to try and keep up with the prop for 60 minutes, they'll be gone after two. And it's because it's just... We all train for the job we have to do. And rugby players have to play for longer. The footballers have to be so, so good, so strong, so powerful, but in short, short bursts. So trying to compare them as athletes is, I think, a silly game as well, because what they're asked to do on an athletic basis is so, so far apart.
Well, let's talk about those transferable skills, because one of the things that's constantly been brought up is a way of kind of awakening the sleeping giant of US rugby is that, obviously, as you go through college, as you talked about there, that is the goal for a lot of kids. Obviously, the NFL is the end goal, but even if you just get through college, your chances in life are massively bumped by compared to what they would have been otherwise. So one of the things is that once you get to the end of college, if you're not going to go to the NFL, what do you do? Because there's not a kind of a championship or the League One or League Two in the NFL. So one of the things in rugby was that, well, we'll just get all those talents who are about 19, 20, 21, and we'll funnel them into the rugby system, and we'll have all these amazing athletes, and they'll learn rugby and they'll progress. I've always been quite sceptical of that. I'm not sure it's ever really worked. Have you ever played with someone who has either just come to the game late or come from a different sport and has been playing the game for just maybe a few years?
Oh, that's a good question, Mr. Lana. I don't think I've played then on a professional level who has done that. I've coached a few women when I was at Cheltenham Tigers in the Championship. We had one player a few years ago who came across from rowing. And she'd been like a high-level rower at university. So hadn't quite made, like, had aspirations to play for to row for Team GB. Hadn't quite made it. Thought she'd stop rowing because of that. She was young 20s. Wanted to just try the sport, came to rugby, and like physically unbelievable physical specimen, like tall, strong, athletic, fit as a fiddle. Like those rowers are so fit. It was teaching her to catch. Like she'd never had to catch in her life, to catch and pass and those motor skills. And then obviously the rules of the game, but that's what anyone knew. And I think that's where it would come from in moving NFL players to rugby, for example, is the players who are ball players will have such an advantage. Obviously, you're not going to get quarterbacks, but the quarterbacks, the running backs, the wide receivers, the defensive backs, the linebackers who have to be used to catching the ball are going to have such an advantage than the linemen, per se, who probably for the last 15 years haven't had a ball in their hands because that's not their job. And they are, as much as strength, as much as fitness, as much as those things are trained skills, so is hand-eye coordination and ball skills. And if you haven't been doing it, to suddenly get a ball lobbed in your hands and be like, all right, I want you to run as fast as you can while holding this, and also you might have to pass it, is going to blow some of their minds. So there are definitely transferable skills. There's definitely the argument to move these players across. I don't think it is as a no-brainer as either it may seem initially or that some people suggest it might be.
Yeah, my take on where I'm coaching is that I imagine a player's got three equal quadrants. Or not quadrants, whatever three types of things are. One is, skills, just kicking, passing, whatever. One is physical ability, fitness, speed, power, strength. And then the other is the ability to lead a game. And I think what you see in terms of players coming from different sports is, even if you just take someone coming from rugby league to union, they've probably got the fitness, definitely got the fitness, they've got the power, strength, they've got the ball skills by and large. Maybe they're lacking a bit of kind of stuff on the ground and locking, that kind of thing. But the game is a totally different thing to what they're used to. And so just something as simple as if you watch a game in a stadium and you see loads of space, it's kicked into that space, and suddenly the fullback emerges to catch the ball, and you realise that they've got there because they've been able to read exactly what's happening, and they've been able to go track the ball to where it lands. Something like that is just not second nature if you haven't been doing it your whole life. And those are the things that they might seem like just small little, we'll just do a couple of reps in practice and you'll get there. They're really hugely difficult to develop. And you see that amongst new guys who come down to, grassroots clubs. They might be really good at catching, passing, might be really quick, but knowing what's going to happen next is just not in their wheelhouse.
No, not at all. And that isn't their fault. You wouldn't expect them to, but it's probably, like you say, something that is underappreciated. Even at the top end of the game, like, a lot of people don't have that, can't do it, have to learn that. It's the guys who can do it naturally who are just the ones who just excel to the absolute top level. The two best I've seen at reading a game up close and personal are, and this won't surprise anyone, Danny Cipriani just sees a game. Like, I'd sit in meetings with Sips and he'd talk about the game and I'd just be sat there and be like, I think I can read the game fairly well. Like, I am not the most physically gifted man in the world, but I understand the game and I can do a good job. And I one of my best skills is reading it. I would sit there and I'd be like, you are looking at a completely different game to me. Like, I don't know what you're seeing. This is unbelievable listening to you talk about rugby. And the other one is couldn't be a more different character if he tried, but Jordan Murphy. Murphy, when he played at Leicester, and there'll be a lot of young listeners who don't know who Jordan Murphy is, apart from Jordan Murphy not having the most successful head coaching stint at Leicester. Jordan Murphy was one of the best players I ever saw play. And I very sadly never got to train him because he retired as I joined Leicester, but he coached me for a long time, Jordy. And you'd sit and listen to Jordy talk about a game. And there was a reason when he played, he just didn't make mistakes. Jordan Murphy was never in the wrong place. And that's because it was like reading a child's book for him. It was like reading a five-year-old book reading a game of rugby. It was so simple to him. So even at the top end of the game, the point I'm trying to make is there's a massive disparity between the reading of the game for guys who've been doing it their whole life and their job. So I expect guys to come across from a different sport and be able to read like that. It's an unfair expectation to have of them.
Yeah, and I did Beyond 80 with Danny Cipriani, and that was probably the most informative 2.5 hours I've spent talking about rugby. And the only time I thought I might know what I'm talking about here was when we did a bit and he was like, ah, I hadn't spotted that. That's a good spot. And it ended up getting cut out. But I was like, okay, that's going to carry me confidence-wise for a couple of years, just that one statement. But Charlie, we're going to move on. We're going to talk about the championship. And we're going to talk about, because the championship's not starting yet, although there's championship teams in action this weekend. Nottingham, where you are at the moment, are playing Leicester in the kind of traditional Midlands non-Premiership championship derby. But there's been talk about the championship this season. Obviously, positive news that there's going to be promotion, relegation back between the championship and the Premiership. Sam and I talked, I think actually it was in one of our pilot episodes, which only a few people will have heard, but we talked about whether that's good news or not. And the comparison I made was between women's cycling, where for the few years ago, women's cycling, there's a big push to get equal prize money. And after the year or so of this, the general feeling from the women was actually, we don't really want equal prize money if it comes at the expense of not being able to fund the coverage of the sport. Because if you haven't got the coverage, then it means that the prize money goes to, maybe four or five of the people who win all the time and make their teams, but it doesn't lift the whole ship because there's just not enough money going around. That's more or less my feeling in the championship, which is that promotion and relegation is absolutely a thing to be celebrated. But if it doesn't come with more fundamental changes, it doesn't lift the whole championship. It probably leads to situations where a team will go up, won't have the resources and will come straight back down, or teams will try and fund their trips to the Premiership with perhaps money that they don't have. You've obviously been there, you've seen it, you've been right in the heart of it for a number of years now. What's your feelings on that?
So I think lots of good points made. I think I'm a firm believer that there needs to be promotion and relegation to the Premiership and Championship. I think both for the interest in the Championship, but also interest in the Premiership, because do you remember a few years ago, it was I can work out what season it was. It was the 2017-18 season. I know that because Newcastle ended up coming down and we played them at Jersey the next season. But do you remember when it was Leicester or Newcastle? Leicester Tigers, who were going to come down, and they had a game at Welford Road, and basically, without putting a final point, whoever lost was probably going to be relegated. And it was one of the most watched and tense games rugby I've ever seen, and Leicester just won. Without promotion and relegation, that would have just been the most boring, no-one-watching game ever. But because there was relegation that season, everyone was watching. It was a huge spectacle. So I think the Premiership needs it to stop there being dead rubbers as well. So I think the jeopardy of relegation and the joy of promotion, they are just essential to sport, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I absolutely agree with your point of we don't want promotion in the Championship if it's only going to benefit the team going up, if they're only going to come straight back down, they're not going to have the funding to compete. And worst case scenario, we get a London Welsh who fund themselves to go up and end up going bust. I was on loan at London Welsh when it ended. And it was one of the most horrific moments of my career. It didn't affect me financially. I didn't lose my job. I went back to Gloucester. But seeing what that did to players, staff and their families and the club was dreadful. It's beyond dreadful. So that's what we absolutely have to avoid. To do all that, I think we have to, as English rugby, as English men's rugby, we have to be pulling towards trying to have the best two top tiers we can. So stop looking at it as Premiership and Championship and look at it of how can we have two professional, ideally eventually fully professional leagues that all work together. Obviously not the teams working together, they're still competing with each other, but the union work together, the two leagues work together to give us two leagues, whether that's two 10s, two 12s, whatever the number, but two leagues that are professional and competitive. And I know some people hate this, but you look across, I know you're a big fan, at France and how they do it. Yeah. Like, I know we're never going to be the number one sport in England like rugby is in France. There's not going to be 20,000 at Championship games like you get in Pro D2. I'm not asking for that, but just the model of how they all work together. Like the Pro D2 games are played on a Thursday and Friday, so they don't clash the top 14 games, for example. Simple things like that. Can we work a way that men's rugby is not competing with men's rugby? Can we work a way that the Championship, the Premiership or whatever tier two, because you hear that in the next 12 months, tier two is going to be rebranded, which I do think it needs. There's a stigma around the Championship now, unfortunately. Whatever tier two ends up being called, whether we've heard for years, it Prem A, Prem B, Prem 1, Prem 2, whatever we end up calling it, can it all pull in the same direction rather than at the moment it feels like Championship and Premiership, unfortunately, work against each other and that's not good for anyone.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point because I totally agree. Like I agree with the promotion relegation. I think it definitely needs to happen. And as you say, last season, Newcastle largely managed to avoid too much criticism because there was no risk of what they were doing. And you could say, I think, that they made the right decision because they lacked the funding and they could have taken that approach. But how useful is it to have one game a season or two games a season for each club, which you basically know the outcome and what that's going to be? And I think that what the Championship needs, and which is kind of what everything needs, it is funding. And you need to have that level. And the level they had a few years ago was sustainable and was able to pull up the quality of the Championship teams and also give people an actual livelihood that they can survive on. Some of the salaries I'm hearing in the Championship is really not sufficient to survive on. And I know of a player who decided to drop down about four levels rather than drop to the Championship because he was like, well, I can start a career, I can do something else, and I don't have to go train like a professional and then travel around the UK like a professional. And so I do think we're in danger of having those guys who aren't quite making it at the Premiership going, you know what, I'd rather play League 2, National 2, or even like, Regional 1 than play in the Championship because I can do a proper job as well.
Yeah, Sam, like, if I'm going to call a spade, the last 3 or 4 years of my career, it would have been far more financially profitable for me to go and play Nat 1, Nat 2, and have a full-time job on the side. Far more financially profitable. Like, I can't even begin to explain to you how much more money I'd have sat in my bank account right now if I'd done that. But I was fortunate that I was still earning enough playing in the Championship to be able to live off. Like, there's a lot of guys I know who don't. And like you say, some of, without going into detail, because it's not a place to, some of the salaries you hear of boys being paid over, some clubs are only being able to offer 10-month contracts. Some are doing 11. They're horrendous. They're not viable wages. I was fortunate that mine were, and I didn't have to do that. Like I say, it would have made more sense for me to, but for my sins, I love rugby. All I've ever, I said in my retirement was all I'd ever wanted to be was a rugby player. And I was going to do that for as long as I wanted to. Like, as long as I wanted to, as long as someone was foolish enough to pay me to play rugby, what I was going to do was going to get paid to play rugby. And that's what I did for as long as I was enjoying it. And that's what I wanted to do. So I was extremely fortunate in that sense. But as you say, we really are at a crux point now with tier two of this can't go on. I think from what I hear, finally, there are some positive conversations happening between the Championship clubs board and the RFU and PRL, etc., where this is going in the next 12 months. And hopefully we see the end of players having the mickey taken a little bit. And it's not even the club's fault, because a lot of the clubs don't have the money to offer. But yeah, I couldn't agree more. Some of the salaries that I know of boys being paid, you struggle to call them a salary even.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And especially when you can't do anything else. You know, I remember when I first left university and I was a teaching assistant on probably similar to what the lower end of the Championship. And I remember the kind of saying, I don't know if I can live off this, and being told, well, you know, you could work in a pub in the evenings. And theoretically, I could have done, like, it wouldn't have been too much hassle. But in the Championship, you can't really do that. You can't just go and, you know, you can maybe pick up occasional shifts somewhere here and there, but you can't really have a financially beneficial full-time job on the side. I'm going to leave on this one, though, Charlie, just to get your opinion. You've mentioned positivity there around the Championship. Where are you on a scale, let's say 1 to 10, 1 being incredibly not positive, 10 very positive, in terms of how positive the Championship looks in the next couple of seasons? And let's say, how much has that grown since maybe 2021, say?
Oh, that is a good question. So how positive am I on the quality of player and the quality of rugby in the Championship? I would say I'm at like a 9 or 10, because there is some sensational players down there. There are some brilliant players in the Championship. Like, many of them have run round me in the last few years. Like, I know firsthand how good a lot of these players are. If you'd asked me 12 months ago where I was on the Championship as a whole, it would have been pretty down, because I felt that we'd been in the same conversations for two and a half years, pretty much since we lost Worcester, pretty much since we lost Wasps. And then obviously Irish, it had been the same conversation. Then Jersey as well was the real nail in the coffin, like a Championship club going. It was the same conversations, the same things happening. We hadn't changed. But in the last month or two, from what I've heard, it sounds like they are changing. They're pulling in positive direction. So I would say I am on the Championship as a whole for the next few years. And I'll call it tier two, because I don't think it's going to be called the Championship. I think we're going to see a rerun, which, like I said earlier, there's a stigma around the Championships it probably needs.
Yeah.
I would say I'm tentatively at a 6.5, 7.
Yeah.
But that hopefully will fly up when we have confirmation of the rumours you're hearing of things that might happen. But until we have the confirmation, I've heard so many, this is about to happen to the Championship in the last 3 years, that until we see it announced properly, it will be a tentative positivity.
I like that. It's good to end on some tentative positivity, I think. Charlie, well, you are going to be back in 5 minutes, or in about a week if you're listening at home. But thank you very much for your debut. We'll clap you off the pitch here at the Whiteboard Rugby Podcast for a fantastic debut. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Sam. Cheers for having me.